From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
I know leadership is hard. You take a lot of arrows, and you're alone at the top sometimes. It's very lonely being at the top. I will tell you, I've got your backs. I work for you. I got your backs. You do what's right. You take tough decisions. You do what you know is in your heart, the best interest of the people. I will protect you. I will work for you. I will make sure that you get the support. And over time, I get you the resources. Because a lot of you are under-resourced. I know you are. And I apologize for that. It's hard to do a good job when you just, you know, you're just cut off at the knees. I apologize for that. Long run, we'll get it done right.
Governor Bruce Rauner speaking with top state officials at his first cabinet meeting. We'll talk about that, several state programs and agencies that are edging closer to running out of money. The governor continues his rhetorical attacks on organized labor, this time at a speech to a group of farmers, and Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel is forced into a runoff election. I'm Brian Mackey. Bill Wheelhouse is away. Our panel on State Week this week includes Charlie Wheeler, director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield, Amanda Vinicky, State House Bureau Chief for WUIS and Illinois Public Radio, and our guest is Ray Long, reporter for the Chicago Tribune. Ray, is this the first time we've had you on since the big announcement that you're leaving the State House beat? Congratulations for that, by the way.
That's a good question. I don't know if it is or not, but you know what? It's always a pleasure to be here.
Thanks. So in the past few weeks, a lot of attention has been focused on the budget for the next fiscal year, the one that begins July 1st. But Amanda, Illinois has more immediate financial concerns, doesn't it?
About $1.6 billion of them, in fact, Brian. And this is the fiscal year 16, therefore, obviously going to end the end of June. And yet money had already run out, and that is ramping up more and more, particularly in March. We'll really see the consequences of that money running out. What's gotten a lot of attention for a state-subsidized daycare program that helps low-income families go to work, attend school, but make sure that their children are cared for, also paying court reporters. So some obvious consequences there, maybe not so obvious. You know, court reporters, so what? But guess what? They're needed by law to take notes and make sure that there's a record of what happens during legal proceedings, and also payroll for prison guards. All of that is running out, and Rauner, during his budget address, had said that a resolution, some sort of deal with he and the legislative leaders was just days away. And it has been more than a week, clearly, since that point in time.
Well, and it wasn't
definitely.
I would say, Ray, I think Speaker Madigan that day also said that he agreed with the governor's characterization that they were probably days away from some sort of agreement.
Yeah, but I think now that there are some questions whether Rauner wants absolute control over what he does, and of course, Mike Madigan's not been one to give absolute control to anybody but Mike Madigan, so we get some of those kinds of issues that are bubbling back, and frankly, it is responsible to have some kind of check and balance, even when you give a lot of power to the government, governor, to swoop in and take money from other funds. You still don't want him to just have, you know, the ability to do whatever they want.
Yeah, and if you look at it, we talk about they're running out of money. What's really going on is that they have exhausted their authority to spend money within the year. If you look at the budget, we talk about the budget. The budget is like a major novel, if you will, that has tens of thousands of paragraphs in it. Each paragraph authorizes some entity, generally a state agency, to spend a certain amount of money from a certain account for a certain purpose. And what's happened is the amount of money put into these paragraphs covering salaries for prison guards at some of the institutions, covering subsidized daycare, covering court reporters, those particular paragraphs, that amount of money has been used up already. And so to continue the analogy, my sense, what the governor is asking is the ability to go in and rewrite the whole thing top to bottom on his own. And what the legislature, in my opinion, rightly is requesting, no, you tell us which paragraphs you want to change, which ones you want to make bigger, which ones you want to make smaller, so that we know exactly what you're going to do, and then we will okay it. And that process has been common throughout the years, where in the spring there'll be the need to do what's called a supplemental appropriation. Sometimes the supplemental actually adds spending authority, but generally it also includes transferring money from a particular line item. The paragraphs are called line items. Transferring a amount of money from one line item to another. In other words, reducing one line item, increasing another, so that the bottom line remains the same. And I think what the legislature wants is they want some oversight. They don't want to give the governor a blank check to go in and rewrite everything on his own.
Well, legislators have given more of a blank check in recent years, for example, to Governor Pat Quinn to do some of that. But
what they did with Governor Quinn, it wasn't after the fact. When they passed the budget, they put aside a lump sum and said, this is all the money you have to spend on human services. You decide how you want to allocate it.
But they might have a different political calculus with a Democratic governor versus a Republican one. Yeah. Amanda, I'm sorry, you were trying to get in there. Yeah, or Ray.
Yeah. Well, I think Amanda is absolutely right. I mean, there is the ability that the Democrats had. Well, they'd say, oh, we'll just give him a lump sum and let him manage it, you know. And now they don't want a Rauner to just manage it. They want to have a little more control. And the other thing is, the legislature is the one that shorted the budget in the first place. So now they're in this bind here, running out of money. They were all hopeful that Quinn would win, and then they'd already have their tax increase or whatever revenue they could come up with put in place to fill the hole. So it's not just a situation.
A Rauner power grab.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's
that, but it's more. And I think it plays into what Rauner has basically, I don't know. I don't know the man's inner thoughts. Obviously, I don't know anybody's inner thoughts, but especially his. That's part of it, that he's new. Nobody really knows what exactly he's going to do. I think the budget that he proposed for next year particularly scared off a lot of Democrats because it was so severe in its cuts and eliminating programs entirely. And so legislators really don't want to give him that power. That's something that Quinn didn't do. And I don't think they thought Quinn was going to do. So that's part of the element here. But what's really baffling to me about this is that you have the governor publicly insisting since the budget address that a deal is near. He talked about it after a meeting with his cabinet on Wednesday. He, I believe, in Chicago, I was not there, but on Thursday made a quick mention as he was leaving an appearance, didn't take questions from reporters, but just said, very close, very close. And yet, if you speak particularly with the office of Senate President John Cullerton, very close is pretty much the exact opposite of the terminology that Cullerton's office would use. They say that there are really major divides for all the reasons that we've been talking about. So I'm interested in why it is that the governor is making this calculus to at least publicly, perhaps he really thinks a deal is near, or at least saying that publicly, when you have one of the individuals whose agreement he needs, because Democrats have a supermajority, so he'd need their votes to get along with this. Why he's saying it when there isn't one?
Yeah, I think one of the deals here is that we just don't have the complete trust level between the governor and the legislature yet. And I do think that they're also in their kind of initial, we want to be getting along, but we also better rattle the swords because, you know what, this really means something. This means something to me, and then we can't do each other. And, you know, the Democrats don't want Rauner to look good. Rauner doesn't want the budget to blow up anymore. And in the middle, let's not forget, are kids that may not get childcare.
Yeah, and prisons that are potentially not going to be able to pay their guards and other things like that.
Or in the case of the court reporters, felony cases that can't proceed. If there are no court reporters, you actually can have a judge and a jury trying someone.
Right, we're bringing it down to the level that really matters. I mean, it's not just an issue of numbers here right now. And you're right, Charlie, about the chapters and verses. The problem is they left a few pages out in the last budget, and they did it intentionally because they didn't want it to look like they were spending wildly.
Rauner is not wrong there.
And it wasn't that they didn't want to look like they were spending wildly. They were, by law, required to not appropriate more money than what they thought the resources would be. And so they deliberately underfunded certain lines to fit other stuff in and still stay within that cap. And they made no bones about it. You know, and Republicans complained bitterly about it at the time.
But the difference is because there are cuts to programs and then there is, quote, running out of money. And so it is far more complicated than we use in these stories. But as we're trying to translate the intricacies of state government to common parlance. But the point being that Rauner, again, isn't wrong when he says, you know, state agencies were directed to spend. That there's a difference. I mean, there could have been, for example, and these are choices that don't sound good to anybody, particularly daycare providers or families that depend on this, for example. But, you know, fewer children from the onset would perhaps be included in this program because they had a limited amount of money. They knew they were coming up. They were getting less than they needed to fully fund the program. And so that's where you run into this. Those are decisions, and again, I mean, so you're right.
But there were also some that you couldn't get around with. You couldn't say, if you're the director of corrections, you couldn't say, well, we only have enough money to last three quarters of the year, so to make it stretch, we're only going to have prison guards there three quarters of the time.
Right, but the Democrats could have made other choices.
Yeah, they definitely, the one thing that I think the point Amanda and Ray are making here is that, you know, the Democrats had a choice last spring. Somebody said this very eloquently on the floor. I don't remember who it was. They had a choice between raising taxes to pay for everything they wanted to do or cutting programs, and instead they chose neither. They weren't going to raise the revenue they needed, and
right.
they didn't, well, and they didn't and cut you, the programs.
If you recall, Madigan put to the House floor, he put bills to cut, he put bills to spend predicated on a tax increase, and finally they chose this goofy middle path that didn't get the job done.
Well, moving on, Rauner, Amanda, you mentioned that Governor Rauner held his first cabinet meeting this week. It was in the very ornate, it's a Senate committee room now, used to be the Illinois Supreme Court chambers in the Capitol building. What did he have to say? What did set the scene for us?
So it was a lot of the cabinet members. They were either in the seats that typically the press and almost the audience would be sitting in the committee room. And then Rauner was also on his side sitting in the seats that typically senators sit in. And there he was right in the center at the, you know, head of the table, basically, you could describe it as. And he came in and gave what I would describe as kind of a pep talk sort of speech. And it was, I will take arrows for you. I'm sorry, things are really hard. It's a tough budget, and I know it gets lonely at the top, but you're public servants, and it is my job, he said, to work for you and to make your job best as possible. We're going to do it together. It's not going to be a, quote, happy feet year. So watch out, guys. It ain't going to be fun, but I have your backs, he said, quite literally. And then, strangely, he got up and left. So it was less of a meeting on his part, more of just the typical, not quite the typical stump speech that I've heard him give, but elements of it at the very least to his cabinet. And then he left it in the hands of one of his top aides, Deputy Governor Trey Childress. He's somebody who comes from the state of Georgia and one of whom Rauner considers his superstar recruits. And we don't know what Mr. Childress did or what the cabinet talked about thereafter, because when we tried and ask some of these appointees, so these are the heads of state agencies, commissions, they said that they had been instructed to not tell the press.
Right. It's a media pop. And so they put their spin out there. And then we don't know, you know, if he's telling everybody now we got to go in and cut everybody's legs off, you know, or anything like that, because they put the hermetically sealed cone of no information out there on top of all the directors. But, you know, eventually it'll come out. The one thing that you get out of this is that if any of these folks or the administration goes off the mark and outside the parameters of what we heard Rauner say, then we've got that as a measuring stick, and we can see whether or not they're doing what they said they would do.
It was interesting because a lot of these appointees were those chosen by the governor himself, but you do have some individuals in positions that are basically holdovers where no decision has been made by Rauner. You know, I mean, there were a couple of individuals that he intentionally kept on that had been chosen by Governor Pat Quinn, others where it remains unclear. Is it just that he's still recruiting, or are these people that he believes have done a good job and wants to stay on board? So you look at some, you know, very key agencies, the Tollway Authority, for example, Christy LaFleur, still there. The Director of the Lottery, Michael Jones, Department of Corrections, right. And I didn't actually see the Director of the Department of Corrections, but maybe he was there. I'm not sure. It was hard. I couldn't detect a pattern, a seating arrangement. They were in assigned seats with kind of placards, place cards, what have you. But I couldn't tell how they were seated or why. But it was fascinating to watch, frankly. And I would have loved to have been able to talk to each of the individuals, just go on down the line. And I had joked that I wanted to do journalistic version of speed dating because you rarely see them all together. Quinn had cabinet meetings as well, of course, but they were private and at the governor's mansion. And from what I have heard, less, you know, organized, more just discussions, less, again, of this assigned seats.
Well, given this is Illinois, of course, everything's behind closed doors. And I think Joe Public doesn't know. Always realize that why can't you go cover this cabinet meeting, or why can't you go watch a Rauner when he's talking to the legislative leaders behind closed doors and all that kind of stuff. And really, it might behoove everybody to open it up, because, you know, the closed door thing has gotten us to the point where we are now.
Coming up, Governor Rauner continues his rhetoric about labor unions. This is State Week.
Support for State Week in Review comes from Illinois Issues Magazine, deciphering Springfield legislation and the state of the state. Information at illinoisissues.uis.edu.
Our panel on State Week, Charlie Wheeler, Amanda Vinicky, and the Chicago Tribune's Ray Long. I'm Brian Mackey. Governor Rauner was in Springfield this week to speak to a group of farmers. And Amanda, can you talk a little bit about what he had to say? Continue talking about labor unions, both public and private, hurting Illinois, basically.
Right. So this is, again, just something that we continue to hear from Governor Bruce Rauner, although he did really, for the most part, leave it out of his budget address and had kept his union comments to his State of the State address. But he's back on it now. And so he talked about why he believes in a right-to-work movement, but he, again, wants this to be locally. And it of course, comes as our neighboring state of Wisconsin is moving forward rapidly and passing a right-to-work version of its very own. So Rauner was in Springfield. He was speaking with farmers at this particular event. And he also, you know, tried to get people on board. He said, "Ag, we need your work." And lawmakers that don't go along with him, he said, he called them troublesome. So that's really interesting because, of course, Rauner has picked a couple of individuals who had been in the General Assembly and plucked them for some state positions in both cases. So DNR Director Wayne Rosenthal, as well as locally in Springfield here where we're taping, Rich Brower, to go work at the Department of Transportation, have a lot of union members in their own districts and may have been seen as, you know, troublesome and not willing to go along with some of his what are seen as anti-union votes.
Yeah, he said, I think he even said, we're going to protect the good ones and get rid of the bad ones, or go after the bad ones. And it does seem like
he's got $20 million to do it.
Well,
he was talking about legislators. Right.
Legislators, yeah. And not just 20. I mean, $20 million is what he put into the, into his campaign
he
fund.
And what,
zone.
Two other people?
Signal. Yeah, he and two other people. And of course, you know, he made $60 million plus last year. So there's a lot more where that came from should he decide
That's
to need
public
it.
Public radio money, Brian.
Yeah, uh-huh. Right. well, wake me up when that happens. But I mean, is this, is he sort of, does it seem like he's picking off pro-union Republicans? I mean, we've also heard talk of other people who might be up for agency positions or something like that.
Well, it occurs to me that he's not going to be able to pick off enough legislators to make Illinois a right-to-work state.
And to be fair, he says that is not his intention. He just wants every locality in Illinois to be able to choose to go right-to-work.
Or to pass a law that would allow every locality to do it. That's not going to happen. I think he's playing to a bigger stage. I think he's got ambitions, national ambitions. It's like every time somebody gets elected governor of Illinois, they start looking beyond that. Rod Blagojevich had that dream until a guy named Barack Obama came along. And I'm sure that crosses Rauner's mind. I've won in a blue state. I'm a hot property. I'm going to maybe I can be the vice presidential candidate and move on up. The only thing to me that would make sense, because otherwise you're setting yourself up for a fall, because it's not going to happen in Illinois.
Right. I did think it was interesting that he sort of threw – I mean, we saw Governor Chris Christie from New Jersey in Illinois quite a bit, even here in Springfield, campaigning with Rauner, and he kind of threw him under the bus this week. He said, New Jersey's going down the tubes. They're a lost cause. We're not going to follow them. Of course, they've had a lot of problems with the so-called – pension reform that they had put through, and their budget is ailing badly this year because of what Christie had touted as his big fix to pensions. But I digress. Ray, you were trying to get in there.
Well, no, I'll pick up on your digression there, Brian. I mean, I was over in Champaign a week or so ago, and Rauner was there, and he was also kind of slamming New Jersey then, too. New Jersey rated ahead of Illinois in X, and he says, I don't want to be rated below New Jersey in anything. New Jersey, come on. So it was
kind of a window into this governor. Again, I think we're still in such early stages. The press is, the public is, legislators are as well. And it is a game of trust. It's also a game of winning. And so you see a lot in campaign brochures and people that that maybe is not all that closely aligned with the truth. But to have Rauner be so reliant on Chris Christie time and time again during the campaign and then throw him under the bus so quickly, I'm sure some legislators are looking at that and saying, oh, wow, particularly Republicans, as these threats of if you're troublesome, just wait. I'm going to do something about it. And again, that $20 million, yeah, it could be a whole lot more. But that was a very, very, very early and strong and intentional signal to them. So maybe he has higher ambitions. Maybe it is that Rauner, I think if you listen back to his talk well before he was looking at a run for governor, he had then had some of these very similar sentiments about unions, and it seems like he's a true believer.
Oh, no, definitely he is. His whole background, he was in a position where the things he tried to do, unions were a major obstacle. He would try and fire people. He'd try and cut salaries. Unions would stand in his way. So I'm sure he sees unions as a major impediment to getting done the things he wants to do in Illinois.
Well, I think, Speaker Madigan even said that, he wasn't surprised by any of the rhetoric and his approach and Rauner's approach to state government, because he'd known Rauner for a while, and that sounded like Rauner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, we're going to leave that topic there. Ray, I'd like to ask you a little bit about Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel. There was a primary election this week. He was trying to get that 50% plus one in order to not have to go into a runoff, but he wasn't able to cross that threshold, was he?
Right. It was very fascinating, actually. He poured lots of money into his race. He's the guy who's got all the big bucks behind him. He's got all the elite of Chicago behind him. But a guy named Jesus Garcia, he was a former state legislator here, for those of you who remember him down here. He was a senator. He goes by Chewy. And Chewy Garcia got 30 plus some odd vote, 35, I believe, or somewhere in that neighborhood. And Emanuel only got 45. There were three other candidates. One was kind of a bomb thrower liberal from the Second Ward of Chicago named Bob Fioretti. And then there was a perennial candidate named Doc Walls. And there was another candidate who was African American named Wilson. I'm blanking on his first
name.
Willie Wilson, that's why. And then he picked up like 10%. So, you know, that all together is a signal that Rahm Emanuel has trouble coalescing. All the polls kept saying, well, he's getting closer, but he never could take it across the goal line in this primary. And there are people out there who think, you know, all of these things that Rahm has done have added up against him. You know, he ended up closing the schools. You know, people want politicians to cut back on spending, but then when they close the schools, they get mad if they're in their neighborhood. And those are a lot of African-American schools on the south and west side. So he's got to somehow figure out how he can get that next 5%. And, you know, how much of it was a protest vote? A lot of people are telling me that they think it wasn't as much a protest vote, like we're sending you a signal, but rather, you know, actual opposition to Rahm Emanuel. So he's got a rough 6 weeks here, and you know, everybody's got to get it right. We don't want any Joan Byrne snowstorm opportunities for Garcia, I'm sure, is one of the things that's going through his mind.
Well, and I think it's even going to be more complicated because we have an additional issue in the mayor's race. At, you know, midnight Friday morning, Moody's sent out a release that it downgraded the city of Chicago's pensions. So they're now just two notches above junk status at Baa2 with a negative outlook. And that sounds like a bunch of what? But that really further complicates the city of Chicago's financial situation and its financial picture in a tremendous way. And the race from, again, I didn't cover it all that closely, but Rahm Emanuel has been fairly, you know, deflecting a lot of questions thrown at him by reporters, but Chewy had been pretty low on specifics as well, and this presents a pretty potentially dire, complicated financial picture that, again, stems back on Illinois' least favorite/favorite topic, pensions.
Yeah, it's one of those deals, too, that there are a couple other things that are going on. In the primary that we had this week, there was on the ballot the question of whether or not there should be an elected school board. When they had an elected school board in Chicago, it was close to a disaster and out of control. However, when they got back to the appointed school board, they kind of righted the ship. They put Paul Vallis in as CEO of the schools, which was a major plus. And they've been chugging along so far as well as they can, but of course there's still funding issues. So people have said, well, you close the schools with an appointed board, so let's try an elected board. You've got that whole thing that's kind of, you know, caused a lot of stir and brought people out to the polls. You've also got several aldermanic races here that have had close races, even for incumbents. I believe there's like 19 that are into the runoffs. So that whole thing is going to bring out an anti-incumbent mood, and that could hurt Rahm Emanuel as he tries in his quest to win a second term.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. We'll certainly be watching in the next 6 weeks as Mayor Emanuel faces off with Chewy Garcia and trying to see how that affects state policy potentially, too. Obviously, a lot of big budget decisions will have a lot of effect in Chicago, although that will probably be after that election is decided. That is our time for this edition of State Week. Thanks to Ray Long of the Chicago Tribune. You can get a podcast of this show on WUIS.org. Production assistance for today's program was provided by Bob Meyer. For Charlie Wheeler and Amanda Vinicky, I'm Brian Mackey.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capital by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.